Hi, and welcome to Recovery Internet Radio, brought to you live and direct or pre-recorded from Straight Stuff Studios. It's summertime. We're enjoying ourselves. We might have a couple in the can. You know, we get them out there for you as soon as we can. So thanks for listening. You can always find us at recoveryinternetradio.com for you can listen live. We are putting our shows up Sunday night at 7 p.m. And if you're lucky enough to catch us live, you can call in. This week will be a pre-recorded show. So if you call, you won't get anybody. But you can reach us always at Twitter, on Twitter, at Twitter. Through Twitter, with Twitter.
Near Twitter.
Yeah. If you use Twitter, you can follow us at Rick Atwater. And we check that live during the shows when we are broadcasting live. Or you can leave any comments or questions you have there, and we will try to address them. Or if they're crazy, we won't. But, you know, do what you can. Anyway, thanks for listening. I'm going to pass the mic over to our host this week and every week, Mr. Rick Atwater. We don't have much of a studio audience, so I'm going to clap.
All right, so all two of you really made a big, you know, really made a big noise.
Yeah, you got our guest tonight and your producer both are really excited about you being here.
Right. So, so let's see. Oh, one quick thing before we get started with Hillary is recovery. So if you didn't say this already, Recovery Internet Radio is our website where all our archive shows are. So you can always go there and get any of the shows that we've done over the course of the last 2+ years. So there's 100+ shows there that you can access and lots of topics and lots of good stuff for people to look at and listen to. So we hope you do. And also you can sign up for our mailing list if you go to our website. And it's great if you do sign up for our mailing list because then more people will listen. And you can pass it along to your friends and forward our reminder to your friends, and so that's all good.
We like that. Yeah, it's a nice email. It's not like an annoying one. Like you get one from like Sports Authority or something every week, and they're like, "We have shoes that are 20% off," and you're like, "I don't care. This is like good stuff. This will make your life better. Yeah. More than shoes."
And it's got good pictures.
Yeah, it's very nice.
Okay.
All right.
I think we've got that covered. Okay. So welcome to Hillary.
Thank you.
And
happy to be here.
It is cool to have Hillary here. And let's just say I've known Hillary a long time. We'll just say that.
Okay.
Should we just say that?
Yeah, that
okay.
sounds good.
We'll just say that. And I think Hillary has a kind of a classic story, especially as it applies to women in recovery. The title of our show, the tag I usually say is Alcoholism, Plastic Surgery for the Soul. And that was something that we worked out this morning.
Yes, we did.
You're going to have to explain that, I think.
In the truck ride.
Should we just say with it?
I can absolutely explain it. For me, at least, all of the things that I didn't believe that I had came to me when I was drinking. I felt that I had sex appeal and that I was funny and that I was lovable and popular. And it was all of these add-ons, similar to plastic surgery. You're not born with that, or at least, you know, from the outside mm-hmm. point of view, that does not exist on you.
Right.
And it transformed me in a very false way.
Right.
And I'm not saying plastic surgery is a bad thing.
Right.
Some people think the word false is negative. I'm just saying it provided something that I didn't believe was there. Instead of allowing for me to grow those things, mm-hmm. Organically,
right.
I applied, you know, a false image. Didn't even know I was doing it through alcohol, but that's absolutely what I believe to be true.
I've seen this cartoon with a picture of a guy at the bar, and when he first, you know, like it goes through the night, and he's sitting there and he's drinking, and when he first gets there, you know, the women are kind of plain, and the place is a little drab, and you know, it's not a fancy place or anything like that. And with each drink he has, the women get more beautiful, and he obviously is more engaging and all of that stuff. And then at a certain point that, you know, things start to get drab again.
Oh, sure.
And then at the end of the night when he's like can't drink anymore, they show what it really looks like. You know, the ashtrays are full and the beer glasses are, you know, all stinky and turned sideways.
He's sweating.
And he's sweating.
Stinky.
If you want an extreme version of that, you can watch, I think it's called Beer something, Beer Olympics, Beer Pong,
Beer Goggles.
Something
beer
like that.
Goggles. Yeah, exactly.
The guy goes through this whole night and he's like Mr. Suave and he's like well dressed, and this really attractive woman is like, oh, hey, it's so great to see you. And they dance and he wakes up the next morning and she's not attractive and it's not a good scene. And he looks like he got in a train wreck and, you know.
Yeah.
So that's really that's what we're talking about.
It is
the plastic surgery.
Yeah. And for me, it was sort of backwards. It wasn't the man who was changing, you know. I didn't go into the bar and see a hot guy and he just got hotter. I just rose to what I thought was his level. I got hot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I became loose and I, you know, loose like comfortable and confident, and men always
confident,
like women seemingly that are really, you know, sure of themselves, and that's sexy. And so all those things applied to when I was drinking.
And so that's where that came from.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Beer, beer goggles. That's a...
Yeah. Did you talk about, like, there's another parallel that you maybe already discussed with, there's inherent danger in that. You know what I mean? If you have plastic surgery, you know, once or twice or five times or... You know, but 20 times, things start to
there's
maybe go
a,
wrong.
Or it's a disorder, you know, where you just have this, there is a term for it that I can't pull out of my brain right now, but it is, you know, a total false image of yourself. And you just cannot get perfect enough to the point where
dysmorphia
you
mean
people who
dysmorphia, I think.
Body dysmorphia.
You'll see those people that have really, you know, plastic surgery gone wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like uncountable numbers of cosmetic procedures.
Yeah, and you can look at my like trail of mistakes as too many plastic surgeries. I have a very botched history.
I use the word insecure. Yeah. So I'm going to use that just for lack of a better word to describe what we're talking about, unless you come up with a better word.
No, it's the opposite of being secure. It makes perfect sense. It really is what it is.
So we use insecure, and it's hard for a person on the outside who might not know you to look at you and think that you could be insecure. I mean, you're tall, you're blonde, you have blue eyes, you're a beautiful woman, you're intelligent, you have a good job. How can somebody like you be insecure? You know, if you're insecure, holy crap, you know.
Yeah.
So how can this happen?
Well,
because you don't apparently see, you know, you don't see that, you don't have the same experience, or you didn't have the same experience of that, of yourself as that. So how did how did it come to that?
I would categorize myself as an ugly duckling.
Mm.
You know, I was all elbows and knees, and I was so pale. I looked, you could see the veins in my, under my eyes, and I looked like something straight out of Oliver Twist, I felt. And when I started drinking in
my
teens.
Like a starving child?
Like a starving child.
Yeah.
But I couldn't even put the weight on. I mean, I tried and tried, but my, you know, genes, metabolism would
just
say you. And I was a dancer.
Yeah.
So I burned it off pretty quickly. I didn't develop, you know, at an early age. I was really, you know, the slow person that didn't really get my body until college.
Mm.
But by then I was drinking.
Mm.
And I didn't have that conscious ability to see myself transform.
Mm.
So I didn't leave that awkward kid.
I get you.
It came with me. There was never a moment for me to reconcile with who I was as a child and watch that develop.
So you felt that way all the way until you started to develop, and by then you started to drink. So
oh, sure. I was already trying to compensate for it.
Right.
And when I blossomed, you know, I've got two daughters, and I see my 13-year-old in that stage of awkward, and she walks with her shoulders forward. She's a stunning girl, but she would never think that. She just physically isn't in her skin yet. And I was there, but I glazed right over it when it changed. And that makes me very sad in hindsight.
So do you think that the insecurity stuff for you has mostly to do with the physical, your physical appearance?
No, I think that the physical appearance sort of seeped in to my psyche.
Okay.
And I think I allowed that to lead my identity.
Okay.
So it was, who am I? I'm elbows and knees and too skinny and pale. I wasn't able to develop a strong sense of self because that's what I identified with.
Yeah. Do you think, I mean, this is like conjecture because you don't know everybody, but like, do you think that that's a common occurrence for young girls to over-identify with their body instead of like who they are?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Yeah.
I don't believe that there's enough, I don't know, soul work, so to speak, at that young of an age. Where,
say some more about that.
Well, at that time, and I can only say this pretty clearly because I have two daughters. They'll be 12 and 14 in August.
Yeah, so critical time.
Yeah, I'm speaking through them and also from my recollection, but I don't find that anyone is having deep thoughts with their young girls.
Yeah.
And I don't say not anybody, but the overall impression I get is that nobody's really taking that quiet time to listen to them and be a safe place for them to talk about their fears and their worries and what do they think of themselves. I don't think I've actually personally ever asked my daughters, what do you think of yourself?
Hmm.
And that would be a really good question to ask them because I could see as a parent, not that I have the answers for them, but I could at least nurture them in a way that turns them towards their inner self as opposed to
start that conversation.
Yeah. And they're so competitive at this age when it comes to what are you wearing and who are your friends and how do you do your makeup and what's your hair like? Did you get the newest shoes?
Mm-hmm.
It's all external. And that makes me really sad. I don't know how to make that prevalent where we're having those intimate conversations with young women saying, okay, enough about what you look like. How are you inside? What does that look like?
Yeah. Who are you?
Yeah. And I've talked to my girls about doing, I am not a crafty girl. I do not, you know, I'm rarely sitting and making things, but I have been drawn to asking my girls if they would do collages with me. And my question to them would be, show me who you are.
Hmm.
Because it'll tell so much about, are they going to put models on there? And are they going to put Converse shoes? Are they going to put their, what are they going to put on there? It would tell you a lot about what young women are thinking.
But you were not inward, those questions weren't for, you know, at your time of growing up, that wasn't what was happening for you.
No, everything who I was inside was coming from the outside.
Right. So it was going from outside in rather than inside out.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. Yeah. And that's unfortunate because then you don't get to know who.
No, especially if you stop that, maybe it would happen at 16 or 17, but I was drinking.
Yeah.
And sure,
maybe you would naturally start asking those questions.
It's possible. Yeah. I may be totally off base. Maybe there's a bunch of people in their late teens that are saying, oh, no. That
happens.
So
the drinking really kind of prevented that or superseded it or replaced it or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll just shut that down.
It was plastic surgery. It was, you know, getting something I didn't have and it sure looked pretty, but it wasn't really me.
Yeah, that's kind of but you didn't know that. That's the unfortunate thing. You didn't have a clue. So let's take the story So how did you manage the insecurity, like before the drinking started? Like, what did?
Well, I think everyone, when they have an insecurity, they compensate.
Right.
And for me, it was trying to look perfect and to wear nice things and to say the right things and to be that front row student who didn't get in trouble, who brought, you know, only positive attention to myself.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an empty place to be looking
back.
Yeah,
like you were...
I was fake.
Being perfect, trying to be perfect.
Absolutely. And I never thought I was, so I constantly kept trying harder and harder and harder.
I wonder if that isn't true for any... Like, I guess you don't have to try to be perfect if you feel okay about yourself.
Right.
You know, so I guess anybody who's trying to be perfect is compensating for their feelings of imperfection.
Yeah. National Honor Society students, looking at you. Hey, I think it's a good message for kids.
Were you in the National Honor Society?
Oh, no.
Oh, okay.
I didn't get that perfect.
Were you a thespian?
No.
Okay. All right. Just checking.
No. I think that's a good message, and I think that that's important that, you know, in relation to kids, your kids or anybody, that when you're that age, I think there's a good bit of insecurity that goes around. But to outward appearance, someone else sees young Hillary and thinks, man, this girl's got it all together. She's got this nice clothes, and she's very well-spoken, and she doesn't get in trouble. And
well-behaved.
Other people's parents say, why don't you be more like you? You know.
Did they say that?
I don't know.
Here's a question.
You wouldn't have known, but, you know, just for those kids that are struggling too, that, you know what, just because it looks that way on the outside doesn't mean that that's what it is.
Yeah.
Was there, were you concerned what other people thought of you?
All the time. Every second of every day.
Probably more so than what you thought of you, I guess, huh?
Yeah.
That's torture.
It's exhausting.
Exhausting. Is this what, see, I hear people throw around the term peer pressure, and I've always thought that it's kind of a misnomer. It's like it implies that other people are making you do something rather than it being an inner driven.
Yeah, it's a really good excuse.
Yeah.
And I don't think that I was succumbing to peer pressure because the pressure was me. I put the pressure on myself.
It was you. Yeah.
Now, whether I...
The problem is insecurity.
Yeah, I wanted to be in that. I wanted to be, you know, my perception of them was that they were very cool and doing the right things. The pressure I put on myself was to match that, which were very unrealistic expectations. I was different than them. I had, you know, that put a lot of pressure on me. But they did not do anything to me.
Right. You were taking care of that all for you.
Oh, I was.
You felt different?
Very. Yeah.
Less than somehow?
Absolutely less than. I grew up in a neighborhood where it was a very affluent community. And as much as my parents were very successful in many things, money was not one of those things that flowed freely through our household. Mm. And we were the kids who... You know, there's movies where it's like the richies and then there's the not richies. And we were in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was definitely, I'm not good enough. I don't have the right things. But that was me putting pressure on me to want to fit in.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so money made a difference in that mix.
Well, and it was those material things. And like I said, when I was that age, the outside was what mattered. It wasn't so much me decorating the inside. It was, how do I look? And for those things to be the most important thing to me, but not be able to keep up, that was really, really hard for me.
It makes me wonder, like, do you think there are kids who are inner directed and who have a sense of self and who can feel okay in those kinds of environments, whether they're, even if they're have-nots in a have arrangement. I mean, is there such a thing?
Yeah, I'm sure there is. I see, in fact, in my youngest, I see a level of confidence that rises above all of that. and I marvel at it. I'm envious that I did not have her, that prowess. I mean, she's fierce. She is just nobody can.
She is a piece of cake.
She is. She is my, you know, I've learned so much from her.
Yeah.
As far as, hey, this is who I am. You know, love it.
Or not.
Or not. Yeah. And if you don't, you're wrong.
Yeah. That is, you know, I mean,
it's
where
sweet.
Does, yeah.
And I'm positive there are people like that in the world, parents that have children like that, parents that were my age growing up that had that. But that definitely attributed to my alcoholism.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
What's the connection? Is there a connection between the, you know, like we were laughing on the way over here about, you know, the drama stuff.
Oh, gosh.
You know, coming undone and then, you know.
Oh, I was the queen. I was the princess.
Is there a connection between, like, the insecurity stuff and the drama stuff? What, and
that's
if there
a good
is
question. Yes, because I think when I was stuffing all that insecurity, the minute something triggered that I'm not good enough was when I threw it all up.
Then everything it's either all,
oh, the horror, everything in my life is just nobody understands. It was a collection of many, many experiences that I stuffed the feeling of insecurity.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I sometimes wonder if it's the insecurity itself or if it's the hiding of it that's the worst. Now, I'm sure, you know, I don't know if you can pick one and say one's worse than the other, but I guess they go together.
They go, yeah, because when you're insecure,
you gotta hide
because
it.
Because you have to hide it, which
right.
I was, you know, when I was compensating,
yeah.
You couldn't stuff things better when you're compensating because you tell yourself a lie.
Right.
You know, you're
and so
saying,
all of that's sitting there waiting to come unglued. What
perfect
you
storm.
Use the the analogy of cutting into a golf ball, which I thought was great.
Yeah.
Now, I've never personally cut into a golf ball, but you explained to me very nicely.
So my big brother and I once, my dad's famous for having coolers full of golf balls in his shed because he's the one that's out in the field when you're trying to tee off and you're looking around for him and he's got his ball retriever out.
Yeah.
So I don't know what drove us to do this, but we ended up cutting a golf ball. And inside a golf ball, you would be shocked at how much of this wire is in there. It's not even wire. It's like rubber band material. And the minute you release it, it sounds like you've caught a big fish and it's pulling the line out to sea. It's like, whing! And you watch it spin out of control and it gets really big, like this big, huge thing of messy, you know, rubber bands. That to me was how it felt to unravel. Absolutely.
So you put a little cut in that golf ball, which if it was another kind of ball, a little cut would just be a little cut, but tightly wound.
But with the golf ball, you get like an explosion of
see what's in here?
Messy,
it's not pretty.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You wouldn't believe how much stuff is in here.
So when did it occur to you that drinking was, did you know that drinking was helping you, or you felt like it was kind of a solution for you at some point, or did you, was it just part of the deal?
It was part of the deal.
So no necessarily no consciousness about it.
No, it was around me, and that I am not saying peer pressure by any means.
Yeah, but it's there.
Yeah, college, high school even.
Yeah.
It was available. It was, you know, what are we going to do? We're going to drink. That's what we're going to do. Drink, play games.
Yeah.
And
drinking games.
Yeah. And I had fun because I was feeling confident and like part of the crowd. And and I was making those choices of that's what I needed to feel good about myself.
You know, and here's another thing I wonder sometimes is if, like, you would be a person that I would consider a fertile garden for alcoholism because, you know, another person might
ready.
Go through college, might have some of the same, from the ex outside, the same drinking behaviors, and then maybe in college get a little wild and do some stuff and whatever, but they didn't have the underlying driving need for relief and solution.
Right.
But it looks the same on the outside.
It does look the same on the outside. and now that I'm not, now that I'm sober and in recovery, I really can see when other people drink, and I've got friends that are, why is it that you can't drink? And I said, well, let me tell you.
Yeah. How much time you got, dude?
Because when you drink a glass of wine, you don't absolutely have to finish it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't wonder why other people didn't finish theirs.
Mm-hmm.
You also won't end the night in bed with a stranger or doing something really stupid.
Mm-hmm.
You'll go home, you'll get into bed, and you might wake up with a headache.
Mm.
I, on the other hand, would probably not go home and wake up next to a person I'd never met in my life.
Yeah.
That's the difference.
Yeah.
And for me, it was that confidence boost that alcohol gave me that made it comfortable enough for me to seek out a man for attention.
Sure.
You know, I was the sexiest person I knew when I was drinking.
Move over, ladies.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I probably was the one that the man woke up to and went, whoa, who is this?
Yeah. What's your name again? Yeah. Well, that's, I mean, but you were, and we were talking too about how, you know, like every other person who is, you know, working on recovery, there's questions, you know, and you were saying sometimes when you have doubts, you look at the checklist and say, you know, am I really? But then just now you gave one of the best descriptions of the difference between a normal drinker and an alcoholic that, you know, one of the best that I've heard.
Thanks.
Perfect. Perfect.
Yeah. It's what.
It's not how much you drank. It's what happens when you do.
How does it affect you?
Exactly.
You know, and my, I don't call them demons. I've been heard them called that.
Yeah.
No, but my, my choices of who I am as a person,
mm-hmm.
Don't make that any better that the alcohol would, you know, mask even those, because the reality is, I just was absolutely not getting to know myself and covering everything up. And that allowed me to do things that I didn't believe I could because I wasn't a good person, because I wasn't enough, because I wasn't pretty.
Let's take a break.
Just taking over me. Start feeling so crazy.
Girl. All right, I hope you enjoyed the music. Thanks for being with us here tonight at Recovery Internet Radio. Find us always at recoveryinternetradio.com. We're having a great discussion with Hillary. Thank you again for being here. But let's get back to it, shall we?
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. Let's do that. One of the questions I'm left with is there a song out there called Naughty Boy? I don't know why I thought that, but I just think, you know, kind of the fairness, the gender equality thing. I don't know.
You could write Beyonce a letter. Maybe.
I'm going to.
You should.
Damn it.
I'm sure she would oblige.
I'm sure she'd oblige.
Or
sure
Jay-Z.
Yeah,
Jay-Z
could
do the counter.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Or they could do like a duet, sort of like a back and forth
thing.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. I've seen enough of them. I don't need to see more.
Nah, we've seen enough of that.
Yep.
The whole elevator thing.
Just ugliness.
Okay. So where were we? We were about, I think we had talked a little bit about you getting, you're in college, you're partying a lot, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And what's nice is we've got the whole setup now for what drinking is done for you. Done for you, done to you.
I know, I heard you say for you, and I was like,
yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. Do we want to leave it at that?
Well, I guess what it's done for me is it's caused me to...
But I think that was your attitude at the time.
Yes.
I mean, it was still doing things. Had it started doing things to you already by then?
Physically, no. No. Maybe I don't understand the to you piece because...
Well, doing things that maybe, like, affecting your behavior, affecting the way you thought, affecting... your, attitudes, feelings, blah, blah, blah,
yeah.
All that.
Yeah, not quite yet. In college, no.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so when did it start to do things to you? And this is looking back now, because you probably didn't know at the time. You
right? So
yeah.
It might be that there's plenty and I'm just not seeing it or, I'm so new into my sobriety. Things are, smacking me in the face every couple minutes I'm remembering things or acknowledging things.
Yeah.
I would say it was when things started happening while I was drinking that were really out of character for me.
Okay.
Fighting.
Hmm.
Throwing things.
Hmm.
Getting really verbally abusive to people that I really cared about.
Yeah.
Saying things that I never would have said to people when I was sober. Accusing people of doing things that I never would have thought they were doing when I was sober. It heightened everything for me. And already being the sensitive, insecure woman, girl, it really sent me. Things were amplified. It was incredible. One sideways glance that a boyfriend or male friend would give another woman. And I was, I was a bottom feeder.
Mm.
I was a piece of dirt and, she was amazing. And I just would turn into an insecure puddle by the end of the night, crying, yelling, waking up with puffy eyes and not really remembering why I got very upset, but knowing that I really made a scene. I started making scenes.
Started making scenes.
Absolutely.
But that wasn't really happening in college.
It did. I lied.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, now that I'm looking back.
Hillary lied. Okay.
Hillary lied.
Hillary lied. Okay.
But I'm not afraid to admit it. I will tell you.
No, you are so.
There's gonna be lots of things.
You are
that
so
I'll
open
say.
About things that, you know, we're just kidding yeah. around.
So,
you know.
No, I do remember. I you know, I lost some friends in college because of how I was when I was drinking.
Did anybody
sure.
ever say anything to you about that at that time?
No one ever said, you know, you drink too much. No, people just tagged me as, what a drama queen.
Drama queen.
It was never, wow,
it was never connected to the alcohol, just
no.
Yeah.
And, you know, daytime, we were in class.
Yeah.
That wasn't really when we had our social moments together.
No.
And, yeah, I was exceedingly, I don't know that that's the right word, but I was such a different person in the social hour.
Yeah. Okay. And so, but these are things that you know looking back more than.
Oh, yeah.
At
when
the time.
I was in it?
No,
not
at all.
A clue.
Yeah.
No.
Just normal.
No.
You know, ups and downs. Yeah. I must be bipolar.
Yep.
Yeah. I always cringe when I hear that. You know, people psych self diagnose, you know, I'm bipolar. And the first
yeah.
thing I want to say is, okay, dude, but how much do you drink? But anyway,
let's
I digress.
Get the whole story.
That's fine.
Here.
I digress.
There's a lot to that.
So, where does the relationship stuff come in? Is this about the time
yes.
you met your first husband?
Yes. So I met him, saw him freshman year in college.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember it was the first night out with the sorority girls and my buddy from mm-hmm. my pledge, the class ahead of me, said, well, what kind of guy do you like? And I saw him
mm-hmm.
At a party and I pointed him out. And I said, there he is.
That kind. That's the guy.
That's the guy.
Yeah.
And he was handsome, clearly really popular, could dance well. And I mean, for me, I was like aiming for the moon just mm-hmm. saying that. I couldn't believe it came out of my mouth that I was mm-hmm. brave enough to point that kind of guy out of the crowd.
Yeah.
But it was, well, that's my type, but it's never going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
but wouldn't that be nice?
Mm-hmm.
And I kept an eye on him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had a crush from
mm-hmm.
afar. We started having classes together. We were both studying advertising. And we became friends.
Mm-hmm.
And when we really became friends was when I got in a really bad car accident in college. And he saw me with my broken arm and, you know, just seemed to... He told me that I seemed softer,
mm-hmm.
not so harsh and... intimidating,
hmm.
which I thought was crazy. I didn't know I was intimidating. It was hardly harsh. It just a complete contrast to what I thought I was.
Mm-hmm.
And we became very good friends, and that was junior year. And then by senior year, I was living with a boyfriend who definitely we had a love of drinking.
Mm-hmm.
And when we broke up,
This is a different
yeah,
person than the one
than
that,
the one I married.
The one you married, okay.
When we broke up was when it gave the opportunity for my first husband and I to start a relationship that was more than friends. And
mm-hmm.
so I had just turned 21 and saw him at a bar first day being back for last semester of school.
Mm-hmm.
And we ended up in bed together.
Hmm.
And... that's, you know, that was the
sure.
beginning of that.
Sure.
Now, I didn't feel guilty about that because I felt I'd known him for quite some time and the sexual tension had been building and,
mm-hmm.
you know, it was a little different than
yeah.
I like a guy, I'll go have sex with him and probably never talk to him again.
Right.
Yeah.
There was something already
was
something going
there.
On there.
I had fallen for him in our friendship.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't know that he had fallen for me so much.
Okay.
Well, at least see that's who I was at the time that I would think that
yeah.
he hadn't.
You would, yeah, that would be your natural
that
assumption.
That would be my natural assumption.
That he doesn't love you
who
as much
am I
as you
for
love
him. To,
yeah.
You know, who am I to have this very popular, handsome man, you know, fall in love with me?
Right. So take us through what happened
okay.
there then. What, with the emphasis on what happened to Hill? Where did Hillary go? Or was Hillary still lost? I mean, we didn't know.
I never knew. I never found her. I should be.
She didn't get lost.
She just never came home.
Never showed up. She ran away and never came back.
Yeah, she was,
just didn't show up.
Yeah. Right. So we're entering this relationship.
The relationship. We're getting out of college. First job.
Right.
You know, the real friend. Like, this is when Friends, the television show, was out.
Mm-hmm.
And that was our life. We had, there were about eight of us, and we would all work hard and all play hard.
Mm-hmm.
And we would go to the same bars, and, you know, it was kind of, then it was like Cheers, where everybody knows your name.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a rhythm of,
kind of like,
you know,
Starbucks for me.
Well, sure. Yeah. Starbucks for me now, too. Yeah, but Starbucks in Seattle, for you. You know, yeah. they're now, right. They've got wine bars at certain Starbucks.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Didn't know that.
Yeah. They're catering to a very popular audience now.
Hmm.
So, yeah. So we were the post-college kids, lots of friends, lots of parties, drinking, drama. Oh, my gosh. My drama level just skyrocketed. That's when I really started
taking... Was it because, like, other attractive women around? And,
you know, we'd been dating long enough where we weren't engaged yet, and I just kept thinking, once that ring's on my finger, I'll feel, you know, secure in this
mm-hmm.
relationship.
Mm-hmm.
All sorts of bar fights and just crazy, you know? And it for me, it just felt like I was destined to have this crazy life, this crazy... You know, dramatic, never a dull moment with Hillary type of life.
Was cocaine involved yet?
No, just drinking.
Yeah. Beer. Sorry, I gave that away.
Are you skipping ahead? In the,
Yeah, I skipped ahead.
Now they're all going to tune out and be like, oh, well.
So that's what happened.
That's why she's sitting in your chair.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Or they could think, oh. Okay.
Yeah, let's get to the good stuff.
Let's get to the good stuff. No,
she sounds like she would be in her prime.
Okay, we're working up to something then, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely. So we eventually he proposed.
Let me ask you one thing.
Yeah.
If somebody had asked you if you were happy at that time, what would you have said?
No. No.
Would you have known why?
No.
Okay, but you knew you were unhappy.
Empty. Yeah.
Yeah.
Filling every orifice with what I thought was happy.
Can we say that? Yes, we can.
This is the internet. I was going to say hole, and then I thought, and then I was going to say crack, and the cracks, and then I thought,
how are we going to do this? Yeah, just lay it down.
Yeah.
So, okay. So we're filling up with
we're
stuff.
We're filling up
with
the gaps.
Whatever. Filling in the blanks.
Yeah.
You were unhappy, but you probably didn't even realize how empty you were.
No. And I was filling everything up with him and who he was. And he recognized that, and he broke up with me about halfway through, you know, a couple of years into the relationship, and said, I don't know where Hillary is. He said that to me.
Wow.
And he said, Hillary needs to come back, because whoever this is not who I fell in love with.
Yeah.
And we took a few weeks off. I went to Hawaii. I chilled out on the beach. Didn't drink.
Mm.
Just, you know, paused.
Why didn't you drink?
I think because I thought, associated that with cleansing.
Mm.
I didn't want to.
Did you become vegan?
No. I ate as much
I'm so
gluten.
Cynical.
Watch your mouth.
I'm sorry.
I was a meat and potatoes girl. Like, no way was I going to give up.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
But, you know.
But I get it.
Cleansing. Yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
I was not a, I didn't I was being, jump on those wagons.
Right. I was being sarcastic. And so you were cleansing.
I was cleansing.
Yeah.
And I was a little fearful because I was in a city that I didn't know anybody.
Were you by yourself?
I was by myself.
Oh, okay.
And my cousin lent me her condo and her moped.
Oh, okay.
And I went there alone to really try
kind
to
find
myself.
Yeah.
That didn't happen.
Did you find her? No.
No. I got her a tan. She looked pretty good with a tan.
Did you find a boyfriend while you were there?
No.
Okay. Well, that was probably good.
No.
Yeah.
I talked to a boy on the beach, but that was it.
Okay.
And when I got home, it took about a week until he was calling me and wanting to be together again. He'd seen me out at a bar, and there I was with my tan and looking happy and not with him and being happy. And to him that was, oh, she's back.
Yeah.
So we got back together.
Yeah.
And got engaged, not like maybe another 2 years after that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. And then, that marriage ended.
Yeah. It did.
And do you want to talk?
I'm happy to talk about it.
Yeah.
Because I think
a lot of
people are starting to hear this more and more. It's more. Yeah. It's not more acceptable, but it's more tolerable. It's easier to swallow when people hear about this situation. But he came out of the closet.
Mm.
You know, he had those feelings for a long time. We struggled in our marriage. That would be a whole nother show, if not 100.
Mm-hmm.
You know, both very open about his sexuality, and I considered him my best friend, and I wanted to support him. And you know, it was still, again, Hillary putting somebody else in the driver's seat. I mean, all I was about supporting him and what he needed, and lying to myself that I was okay with it.
Yeah.
I really was an amazing.
And I can only guess at how you were able to lie to yourself.
I drank.
Yeah.
I stuffed.
Mm.
I told myself, why would I deserve a straight man who loved me 100%, who I was enough for.
Mm-hmm.
It made perfect sense. It fit right into my story.
Right.
And then that's when sex became separate from love for me.
Mm-hmm.
I reasoned my way through that relationship of, but he's just having sex with these men.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't love them like he loves me, or like he doesn't have a relationship.
Right.
So for me, sex became not love. Mm-hmm. And so very easy to do without attachment.
Sure.
Which is really sad to me, because that theme carried on after the divorce and allowed for me to be very promiscuous and very dismissive.
Mm-hmm.
But never having sex without being drunk.
Mm-hmm. And what did you tell me that your girlfriend said to you, you're like a dude.
I'm like a dude.
They meant...
There was that show, Sex in the City.
Yeah, yeah.
I was Samantha.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What they meant by that is you were able to separate the love and the sex thing completely.
And really all it was is I was not able to do that. I was just so guarded and afraid.
Yeah.
That I decided that would be... my defense. How could you do that? It's just sex.
The safer thing that way. You don't have to worry about getting hurt. You don't have to.
Right.
Nope. No muss, no fuss.
Yeah.
And I think that my experience is the emptier you are, the more more guarded you become. Because there's more to hide. There's more fear in there. There's more, you know.
Yeah, and it may not be the emptier you become. It's the more stuff that's in there that is
more self deception.
Yeah,
filled up with self deception.
Full of garbage.
Yeah, like, and maybe that's what they mean when they say people are full of shit.
Oh,
you think that is?
I think that's it. I think we just figured that out.
Yeah, I think we got that.
I think we can write the Wikipedia on full of shit.
This is what this means.
Yeah.
Right. When you don't know who you are, you fill yourself up with shit.
Yep.
And then when people get to know you, you have to hide the fact that you're full of shit.
Yeah, and if they figure it out, you shit on them.
You shit on them before they shit on you, I think is the...
Hell yeah.
Yeah, that is the way that's the way it works.
Yes.
Someday that golf ball gets cracked and
then there's a boing.
Flying out.
It's not pretty.
And it all comes flying out. Yeah. So that's great. I mean, that's a good analogy. So that relationship came to a close and then you were single for a while.
Yeah, and we had two kids together.
Had two kids,
So that was... I got to a point, and a lot of people are like, well, when did you finally say enough is enough? Mm-hmm. And it was when I started to have that inward looking, and I don't know how it was triggered, but all of a sudden I started to pay attention to myself.
Yeah.
And when I started paying attention to myself and seeing that my needs weren't being met and that I was compromising the fact that I really deserved 100%. And mind you, I wasn't, you know, in that space overnight thinking, wow, I really am the person who deserves that. It something happened. I don't remember what, but I wasn't afraid to leave it. I wasn't afraid to leave him.
Yeah.
And I, even if it was a righteous situation, thank God, I'm okay with the fact I was righteous at the time, because
yeah, that's what, at least it served to move
yes,
you along.
Yes, it got me along. It moved me along, and it created a space for him to live his authentic self.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that's really who he was, and he was right. staying for me because he did love me. And
you guys still really care about each other.
Absolutely.
Today,
you know, he's
yeah.
married again. I'm absolutely thrilled about that.
Right.
He's married to a very good man.
Mm-hmm.
And they love each other, and it reflects right upon my daughters that they've got two men in their life who are happy and love mm-hmm. each other.
Yeah.
I mean, that's awesome.
He was a stitch at your second wedding.
He was.
He was so, well, he's
that was really hard for him.
He's a great guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't hard because he was still in love with me or anything. It was already in a very secure and happy relationship, but I think...
Did he have doubts about the second one?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think he watched, held his breath a bit.
Yeah.
Knowing that, of course, our daughters would be involved as well. And
yeah.
He wasn't the hugest fan of number two.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So how then you what was your drinking like between?
Heavy.
Yeah.
Heavy.
And
I really, my day consisted of work, give the girls some food, sit on the couch, drink maybe two bottles of wine a night, and hide them. Especially if I was going to have people come over, I just, you know, they didn't need to know. It was none of their business.
Right.
But I wasn't feeling sorry for myself.
No, that's not your thing.
That's not my deal.
No. Why didn't you want them to know how much you were drinking?
I didn't want to stop.
Oh. Did you think that they might think you were drinking too much
yeah.
at that point? So yeah. you must have known you were drinking too much at that point.
Yes, I did.
In a backwards way.
Back-asswards way,
yeah.
yes.
If you're hiding it, you
right?
must
you
think there's something wrong.
You would have thought that I would have been, you know, like aware, but no.
Well, that's
it
like
was...
the acknowledgement that, yes, it probably is too much, combined with the, I don't want to stop anyway. That's
yeah.
like, I mean, that's how I would interpret it.
Combined with, they might think that it's too much, but I need this, screw them.
Yeah, they haven't gone through this.
right.
They
if they knew
yeah.
what I had been through,
like,
they'd be drinking a couple bottles of wine, too.
I'm holding down a job. I'm raising two girls.
Right.
I'm financially secure. All of these things I'd done on my own. So I thought, you know, screw you. I get to do this. This is my
right.
reward.
Did your parents know how much you were drinking?
No.
Nobody knew?
No.
Okay. Just you.
Just me.
Yeah, yeah. I whispered that so that
I know nobody knew.
Hey, we're on the radio, so you're gonna have to
whisper
later.
Oh yeah. Oh okay. You knew.
So I knew.
You knew. You knew I was whispering, didn't you, listeners?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So okay.
They can't read lips.
So then, still no activity in terms of, you didn't want to stop this. It was still, at least in your mind, it was still helping you out. And then
it was helping me not be angry with him.
Oh, okay.
Because if I was left alone with my thoughts that weren't sedated, I would have felt everything. And I didn't want to feel. I didn't okay. want to feel how incredibly hurt I was. Mm-hmm. It was really painful.
Yeah.
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 was.
Yes.
Yeah. yeah. You don't want to lose somebody to something out of your control because there's no fixing it.
No.
And being out of control for me was unacceptable.
Huh.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you were living in out of control, weren't you?
Oh, completely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I was drinking. I was working for the first time after 7 years of being a wealthy stay-at-home mom who had a personal trainer, and you know, wasn't life just grand? And went straight to a little apartment back in my hometown. Got a job. Felt like, you know, She-Ra. Like, I had to be the warrior princess.
Do everything, get shit done, you know, prove
to everybody that I'm A-OK. So it was, you know, behind the scenes that I was falling apart.
Right.
I didn't want anyone to think that I wasn't tough, and I got so many compliments for getting through it so well that I thrived on that so much. I didn't want people to know I was falling apart more and more each night, you know? So I was hiding it.
Yeah.
I didn't want anyone to think I was weak.
Yeah.
So the drinking became, I don't know if it shifted to what I used it for before, but, you know, we're still, the theme here is absolute insecurity.
Right.
And the plastic surgery is pretty spot on.
Right.
Because, you know.
Yeah.
This was like maybe round two of that.
Yeah.
Same.
Absolutely.
Feelings. Yeah.
And I, do you want me to just kind of continue through?
Yes. So you get.
So I spent some time with men that I'd gone to high school with.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had history with them, and I was scared not to be with anyone I didn't have history with, because there I'd been with a man that I had known since I was 17.
Right.
And I slept around quite a bit. I had drama with a couple of those guys. Not pretty drama, you know, jealousy. I was just a mess. Mm. And I'm glad that those relationships didn't somehow sort themselves out and turn into a permanent relationship, but one of them did.
Mm.
And that one, very, very handsome man, he came across as having his shit together, mature, straight. That was my number one criteria.
Mm. Sexually.
Yeah.
Not substance.
Well, funny
not
enough,
in terms
he
of
was,
substances.
No, mm. but
not
he
straight
was.
Edge.
No, yeah. not straight edge. And he, you know, he also was so opposite. Like, I have tattoos, and I've lived in Chicago, New York City, and I am a city girl, and he was not a city boy. You know, he was very safe, and came across like this sort of neutral Prince Charming that would put me in a calm place.
Mm.
Yeah. So, and when I was around him, or the fact that I had him in my life, made everyone around me calm down. Like, oh, she's going to be okay.
Right.
She's going to be okay. She's found love again.
She's got a good one. Yeah.
That's all they saw.
Right.
But, you know, and I'm not, I will never speak on about him and who he is as a person. But because that's just, I just don't feel karmically like that would be a very good idea.
Yeah.
But who I was with him.
Right.
Was someone who was trying to, you know, make believe. It was like playing house.
Mm-hmm.
And
he was another solution.
He was another solution.
He was a drink.
He was another drink.
Yeah.
And he drank.
Yeah.
And yet he had been married once before, and his reason for not being with her anymore was she was an alcoholic.
Hmm.
And he drank like a fish. So I always kind of wondered about that.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's, you know, and you're okay with me drinking like a fish.
Mm-hmm.
So what's, you know, but I thought, well, as long as he's okay with it.
Yeah, go with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, so we get married.
Mm-hmm.
It was that wedding day that I was hammered. I barely remember the wedding.
Mm.
I don't remember the reception. I don't. I've seen the pictures. I look really happy. But that's Hillary being perfect. And things just went sideways pretty quickly. Mm. Because, you know, life, like I was kind of mentioning that during the day, you know, in college I had to go to class. I had to have my shit together.
Yeah.
And then at nighttime it's like, it's where the freaks go, you know, like that's like, woohoo! And so when he and I had a deal with the day, it was not... It was not good.
Mm.
We just really weren't compatible.
Mm.
And I wasn't ready. He'd never had kids before. Sometimes that works. Sometimes it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I was struggling. And we were drinking. more and more and more. And
Coke was in there too.
Well, that's when Coke came into play. I introduced it to him.
Mm-hmm.
I know he'd done it before, but we were that on again, off again couple you hated to hang out with because you never really knew what was coming and going,
mm-hmm.
or who was going to.
They might be bickering. Or
who was going to slam the door, walk out of the party?
Yeah. Right.
So, I had some good friends, and you know, in my industry, it's pretty prevalent, and he and I started partying pretty hard. Pretty much every weekend, mm-hmm. starting Friday and ending with us trying to recover Sunday. And my life had become just this work all week, party really hard, sometimes Thursdays, and recover and go back to work. Mm. And it was gross.
Yeah.
Looking back on it was gross. When I was right. in it, it was life. It was survival. Yeah. Or it was not even survival.
And the same kind of question, but were you happy?
No.
Did you know you weren't happy?
Yes, I knew I wasn't happy.
Yeah.
And that made me sad.
Yeah.
I mean, I got really, really sad.
Did you feel like you'd blown it?
Yeah, I felt like I'd really blown it for both of us.
Mm-hmm.
And I had been on antidepressants before the wedding. And I thought, here, finally, I have a man who's going to love me 100%.
Yeah.
And I bet I was on these and needing them because I was in that other relationship where I wasn't getting enough, and maybe that made me sad. So I got off my meds before the wedding,
mm-hmm.
and that wasn't such a smart idea for me.
Mm-hmm.
And alcohol only made that worse, and so did cocaine.
Right.
And it was, you know, it just... It's not good all around.
Yeah.
And I have a very hard time admitting that it was a bad choice, because that means that I have a part to play in its demise. And that's hard for me to admit, because what ended the marriage is that he cheated on me.
Yeah.
And it's really hard for me to be okay with that or think that I contributed to that event. But knowing that before that even happened, I knew I shouldn't have married him, that, you know, was kind of a symptom.
Yeah.
And that really upsets me. It's embarrassing.
Sure it is.
It's just hurts. It makes me feel like a failure.
Yeah.
And a liar. Yeah. I do lie.
Yeah. You were lying to yourself for years.
Oh,
and you were still lying to yourself.
I was lying to everybody.
You were lying to yourself. Then you have to lie to everybody because, the whole thing is. And we were talking earlier about how the whole drama thing got worse, because when one little cut and the whole thing unravels, that has now gotten worse. Now we've added, you know, booze and coke fueled, you know, bullshit to the mix.
I was a powder keg.
Yeah. And so then.
And then.
That's what led to your.
Yeah. So my bottom.
Yeah.
You know, I could not control. I could not patch that leak, you know, mm-hmm. which is something that I worked so hard to do my entire life. But that seam was cut too deep.
Yeah.
And I overdosed 3 days after. After the cops came to my door looking for the woman he'd been sleeping with, because her husband sent them.
Yeah.
And that was enough.
Mm-hmm.
That was traumatic enough. And even that, I thought, well, I'm sure people just think this is just one of those things Hillary goes through, and I shouldn't be that upset about it. But geez, mm-hmm. I was wrecked.
Right.
And my kids were away with their father, and I was so checked out emotionally that I was alone. My parents had a trip pre-planned, so when this all happened, there was no choice but for me to be alone.
Right.
I mean, I could have left and gone to see my brother, but I was too depressed to even get in the car. And I drank about, I don't know, 5 bottles of wine over the course of 24 hours. And by the last 2 bottles, I just said, fuck it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm done. I'm so done. I can't fix any of this. I can't, I can't turn this one around. So I overdosed, and one of the most special women I've ever met in my life could sense something on my text to her. She texted me, and I don't know what I texted back. She's an RN. It's a good thing she found me. Mm. She got me to the hospital in time. And then I went to the psych ward for 10 days, mm-hmm. voluntary.
Yeah.
I call it my blue room. Sat in there with, you know, crazy John next door. And mm-hmm. Oh, boy, that was scary. I was scared. But that didn't stop me from drinking. When I got out, I knew that I had to taper it. But I didn't look at the drinking as a part of the problem. I looked at the relationship and the cheating and, you know.
And you were depressed.
And then I was really depressed.
Right.
And I abstained from drinking. I was a dry drunk. For those of you who do not know that term, because I didn't until, mm-hmm. you know, I'm 117 days. I mean, that's forgivable, but
yeah.
I was not drinking, but on my own. Like, you know, I wasn't talking about it.
Yeah. No role.
White knuckling.
Yeah. No program, no role.
Yeah. So over the course of, you know, a year or not even a year, gosh, like 9 months, from July to March, whatever that puts it. I got drunk a couple times, but to no drama until March 15th. I had some words upset with my first husband and his husband, and it just really sent me. And I wanted to not feel how upset I was because I hadn't been that upset in a little while. And I started at 11 in the morning on a Saturday mm-hmm. with tequila shots,
mm-hmm.
and I'd never gone that hard before. I'd never hit it so hard, but
it had been picking up speed for the last 9 months.
My God, I had
months.
No idea.
Yeah.
You know, when people say it's a progressive disease, I'm like, what, you just become more of a drunk as you get older? Mm. No, you literally drink more. Like, your intake is like balls to the wall.
Right.
I am getting wasted. I'm right. checking out for the day. Watch out.
And that wasn't the way you drank before.
Never.
Yeah.
So I plowed through the day, and by 7 or 8 o'clock at night, I was on the phone with my parents sobbing. They had to come pick me up, and all I could say was, take me back to the psych ward. I want to die.
Mm-hmm.
I want to die. And that they said, we're not going to do that. We're going to get you home. And they tucked me into bed. My daughters were there. They didn't really know what was going on. They do not know about my overdose. Someday I will talk to them about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I woke up the next morning and I was ready. Mm. And they came over and I just looked at my mom and I said, I was starting to cry. And I said, I have a drinking problem. Mm. I need help. This is not okay. I can't drink anymore. I can't.
Yeah.
And she said, oh, honey. And she said, well, that's okay. There's a meeting tonight at 7 o'clock. Oh, really? You have a paper in your purse. Uh-huh. You know, we never talked about this.
Uh-huh.
And that was the beginning of, you know, my journey, which is terrifying.
And I've heard, you know, it was really, and I've heard the story of your first meeting, which we won't go into now, because that's a whole nother, because that's another show too.
Yeah, right.
From here on. But I really, I want to thank you for being so open and so clear about your path and what you felt like, because I think that that's going to be so helpful for people to hear.
Oh, I hope so.
What you went through, what you questioned, and your, you know, the search for Hillary.
Yeah.
The search for Hillary goes on.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even the questions I asked. It's most of what I ignored.
Yeah. So I thank you for coming. And
thank you for having me.
I thank our listening audience for listening into our show.
Yeah, yeah.
Today, tonight, and where we are every Sunday night at 7 p.m. So hopefully you'll tune in again. And Yeah, so I think we'll close.